I think we got a pretty good lineup. Our best young players have all aged a little bit, so now they're all early 20s. So I think they have the maturity now as well as the youthful exuberance. I think it's time for them to prove that they can play. We've been in the playoffs, I think, 3 years in a row now, but lost the first round, and I think it's time for the next step.
So I think as far as stating before we've even played our first game, what will and won't be a successful season, it's going to be played out on the ice. It's not going to be said here today or decided here today what threshold we would consider success and not success. I think it's important for our players not to focus on any other threshold other than the ultimate one.
Wendell Clark from yesterday morning's leadoff, and then Maple Leafs president Brendan Shanahan. As we are now down to zero sleeps, it is today, it is tonight, 13 hours away, the start of the NHL season, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens from Scotiabank Arena on Sportsnet, right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Arash Madani with me all week long.
Did you sleep last night? Were you able to?
Well, that's always a negotiable situation at the best of times.
When the alarm clock goes off at 4:30 in the morning, were you?
I've had a pretty good week, pal. I have no idea if it's the effect of having you on in studio. I have been waking up before the alarm has gone off.
You're kidding.
I have not heard this damn thing ring.
Wow.
All week. And it's always about within a 5-minute block
window, yeah,
before the alarm would go off. So I'm kicking into high gear. It's the NHL season. It's here. And there are expectations on this Toronto Maple Leafs team.
You are high on these guys. You're all in on the Leafs.
Do you think I'm high on these guys, or do you think it's time to expect something of these guys?
Well, that's it. I mean, that actually is it. I mean, think the tank for Austin Matthews, the draft pick of Mitch Marner, the pursuit of John Tavares.
Remember Nylander before Austin as well.
And knocking on the door of the playoffs, getting into the playoffs, losing in the playoffs, the notion you have to walk before you run. And I guess you give them a mulligan because of COVID and the bubble and whatever, but it's not, Scotty, that there's an expectation. It's that if they don't do it this season, then what?
Well,
then what are you?
Well,
then who are you?
Not to mention the fact that there are significant decisions to be made this summer, whether they do it or don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got the core four locked up. You've still got Morgan under contract for multiple seasons. Brody's there. Muzzin's there locked in. But you've still got your bottom two or three on D that need to be addressed, and that's burying the lead because your goaltender's an unrestricted free agent next summer. And Zach Hyman is an unrestricted free agent next summer, and someone would say, well, Zach Hyman, what really is he? Well, you score 20-plus goals, and you're one of the few guys on the team who will go and dig the puck out of the corner, will go to the dirty areas, as they say, Arash. Like, there are decisions to be made here. And my interpretation, and I will be corrected if I am wrong, I am sure, is that the changes to the supplement, the Thorntons, the Simmons, I think Brody is more a core guy. But
Spezza
from last year, carry over to this year, the Barabanovs and the Mikheyevs and the thises and the thats. Goodbye, Janssen. Goodbye, Kapanen. The changes to the supplement. If this doesn't work, do they then go to a member of the core? Not the core, but do they extract one of the big-time salaries? And that'll get people rolling their eyes. Oh, but you're back to trading Nylander before the season. Nope, that's not what I'm doing. But what I'm saying is, I don't give them a mulligan for the pandemic because every other team dealt with it, Arash.
Right.
And if you go back to pre-pandemic last year, regardless of what the charts and the graphs say, how many nights last season did you turn off the TV after the final horn and feel like you were left wanting more? There wasn't consistent engagement. Game over game, and sometimes within game. So there's a lot at stake here for this Maple Leafs team, and this is a Maple Leafs team that's got $40 million or so bucks committed to four players, and they did that, Arash, assuming that the salary cap 2 or 3 years down the road would probably be about $90 million bucks. Well, it's going to be $81.5 million this year and next, and there's a prorated factor into this year, all that escrow. But the salary cap ain't moving.
And, Scotty, you're looking at this through the lens of how big a season this is for the players and the core and the rest. This is Toronto. This is Toronto in a market where it seems like we, not just we as in you and I as radio talk show hosts or reporters, the public, can say, who's the biggest star of the Toronto Raptors?
Today? Well, it's still Kyle Lowry.
No, I disagree with that.
Pascal Siakam.
And I disagree with that.
Nick Nurse?
It's Masai Ujiri.
Oh, well, okay.
This is a market that where Alex Anthopoulos and Masai Ujiri are talked about with reverence, and that's the bigger water cooler conversation so often seems to be about executives in this town, not coaches, executives. And now is this season, and I don't want to call it a referendum on Kyle Dubas, but is this the moment, is this the season where there has to be a decision at the end of it on, are we moving, are we continuing to go in this direction with him? He's now got his coach. We know that he and Babcock were never on the same page. He brings Sheldon Keefe in midseason, then the pandemic hits, the bubble, etc. But now you've had quite a full offseason because you got eliminated in the first round. You have Lou Lamoriello is no longer around, so you have built this how you want to build it. You're in an all-Canadian division. All eyes on the country are on you and this team now. As much as this is a put up or shut up year on the Matthews and the Marner and the core, as you put it, the captain, the assistant captains, on whether or not Nylander is going to be part of this future. We know Brendan Shanahan has been all in on Kyle Dubas, so this is it. We're about to see the flop and the turn and the river over the next 56 games and the playoffs. And at the end of it, to me, the Leafs have gone all in now. They're at the cap. Cap's not going up. This is who they are. This is what they do. This is what they're going to be.
Well, here's a question about the changes to the supplement, particularly Kapanen and Johnsson going out the door. And we talked about this a lot on the show last year. So much focus, Arash, was on the $40 million that four players, Tavares, Matthews, Marner, Nylander, were taken up. This is a team that with Kerfoot, Kapanen, and Johnsson occupying its third line was paying its third line approximately $11 million. That's outside the $40 million to the big four and doesn't factor in Frederik Andersen or anybody on the defense corps.
Right.
And Jake Muzzin just got a bit of a raise. He's kind of 5.6-ish where he was 4.25 or something before Morgan Riley's still in the $5 million range and arguably on the cheap at this particular point. We'll probably want more when he's an unrestricted free agent in the next couple years. Were they so put off by the inconsistency last year that the first thing they attacked was the fringe, the supplement to the core? Or did they make those moves out of necessity because of the salary cap constraints. Because Joe Thornton, first ballot Hall of Famer. And quite frankly, looking forward to that speech that he gives at Brookfield Place. That will be a very good night a number of years from now. But he's here on as cheap a ticket as you can sign.
It just feels weird. The signing at the time felt weird. I get it's a no loss deal, but
it's got potential reward and no risk. And I do believe that his accessibility to people like us will make life easier for the Matthews and Marners of the world. He might be able to, and would do this, I think, with some intent. He'd judge a situation and maybe lob a phrase or a turn of thought out there that we might latch on to for a day or two that gets
us. I actually talked to Joe Montana.
That one
was
good. I wish I could say that.
Right.
Just wake up every morning and talk to one of the great quarterbacks of my favorite NFL franchise. But he could lob something out there, Arash, that people like you and I latch on to for a day or two, and that distracts us from a bigger issue going on. Inconsistent play or underperformance by people they're counting on. Spezza's on a cheap ticket. I know Simmons is not at the minimum. He's a mil and a half, but hell, he's cheaper than Kapanen's 3+ and Janssen's 3+. So they're doing a dance here. They're doing a dance, and as we talked about at the start of the show, future complications are knocking on the door because you got Frederick in his final year. You got Hyman in his final year. You got Riley coming up in the not too distant future. Mm-hmm. There are more big decisions to be made. And so the window is open. And I think the window is open even further than it has been because of this schedule and because they're in a division where they should make the playoffs.
Like they have to make the playoffs.
No, like that is the baseline expectation.
No. I totally disagree. The baseline expectation has to be win a round.
Well, you got to get in to get, yes.
How many more years can this team lose in the first round of the playoffs?
Yes. I'm with you 100%. But I'm going chronologically here. The baseline expectation is get into the playoffs. And I was about to say, I don't care if you finish first, second, third, or fourth. Get into the playoffs and win. And in the meantime, and there are going to be a lot of, I think, I don't want to say excuses, mm-hmm. but there are going to be reasons sometimes where teams aren't on top of their games. Because you're playing just so much in so little time. We talked a lot about load management earlier this week. Some of that may factor in. Guys might be playing with tight muscles, et cetera, et cetera. All teams are going to go through it.
Yeah.
But what we need to see, to the best of their ability over the course of this season, is some bloody consistency. Where you're not leaving... Well, none of us will be leaving the rink, but where you're not turning your TV off at the end of the night going, not this again, not this Tuesday night disinterest after the big Saturday night game against Montreal. You got six opponents. You're playing them all 9 or 10 times. You're not crossing the border. The other fan bases are as rabid as ours. There are bragging rights on the line. I think it matters to Leafs fans to be better than Canucks fans and Habs fans, et cetera, et cetera. It should matter to these players. National bragging rights should matter to these players. Arash, I'm telling you, I'll take you one step further. This team should come out of the North Division and be the North's representative in the Final Four. Should. I didn't say will. I said should. Give me a team out of the other six who is clearly better than the Toronto Maple Leafs. And all we're doing right now is looking at pieces of paper. But give me a team that is so clear-cut above the Toronto Maple Leafs that the Leafs shouldn't emerge from this division. I'm not saying the Leafs are clear-cut above all other six, but I'm saying if you work your ass off, you bust your ass, you commit to both ends of the ice, and you produce, you should come out of this division.
Mm-hmm.
Not just win it in the regular season, come out of this division and bubble up with three other teams, presuming that's what happens, and play for the right to compete for the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I would say that Winnipeg is probably in that conversation. Based on what the Flames did last year, I guess Calgary's kind of...
Why is Winnipeg in the conversation? Because of their top six forwards?
Yeah.
The defense has suffered...
And it looks like they have themselves a goaltender. It looks like.
Well, they had a hell of a year last year.
Yeah. But also... There are expectations set for a Maple Leaf team that is so unaccomplished.
So what's the alternative?
Let's compare it. Okay, let's just take the hockey part of it out for a minute. Yeah, so the Raptors win in 2019, but they had won rounds, plural, before. 2016, they got to the conference finals. They routinely won in the first round. They just ran into LeBron. Your Cubs, 2016, they win it all, but there was a progression. They were on the rise. They had to learn how to lose before they got
there. They'd beaten the Cardinals, their rival in the 2015 playoffs.
The Dodgers.
Yeah.
The Dodgers got to a couple of World Series before they finally did it. There seems to be, for the most part, now the Lakers of last year, different. They have LeBron and AD, that helps. The Tampa Lightning last year, how often were they knocking on the door? The Leafs have not gotten out of the first round. The Leafs have no idea how to win in the playoffs. None of these guys do. Joe Thornton's been to a cup final. Jason Spezza got to a cup final in 2007.
14 years ago.
Right.
And you and I were both there, dude.
Yeah.
That was
a long time
ago. Suddenly a while ago.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it.
Jason Spezza faced Timu Salane. That's how long ago it was.
Correct.
So I understand what you're talking about when it comes to the talent. And I understand what you're talking about when it comes to the salary paying this talent. Do something.
But that's the expectation we're setting on this program. I mean, that's,
yeah,
like, you should come out of the North. I don't know if you'll come out of the North. I would not be surprised if you didn't, given your history. But that's the expectation. That's the expectation. I would rather go in and overshoot the mark on expectations than just sit back and Al Bundy with my right hand and scratch myself and say, geez, you know, it'd be nice if they just make the playoffs. Because it's, quite frankly, it's fun. It's just fun to watch a playoff game. No. Have expectations.
Well,
take that step.
It was fun when they were really young, right? It was fun when you have no expectations for a team and they do something. But now they have some stubble on their faces. Now they're not kids anymore.
And they're getting paid. And ask Pascal Siakam,
right,
for the most recent example in this city, how the narrative can turn when the checks start getting cashed, right? This isn't, oh man, this team is good and Austin is a rookie and Mitch Marner, wow, you know, 90 points and on a rookie contract. Look at the value. Now we're arguing overpays on people like Mitch Marner. I think we thought Matthews was always going to get his cash, but you've got to produce. They are paying you on projection. We are now in the projection window.
And you better win, because then going back to my previous point, if you're paying based on projection, and if you don't win this year, that means your projections were wrong, right?
Well, that is the loosey-goosey stuff that will long be debated on Twitter, right? Because people will argue, well, where are they in the process? And
they'll point to what the Islanders are doing, which seems to be which is what the Leafs were kind of doing, except they weren't doing. How about, Vic, let's get clip four ready. This is Brendan Shanahan on the off-season moves about the Maple Leafs and what it means for this season.
I think where we thought the next step for us at the end of last season and watching the playoffs and again, looking at where our team is heading and where we had an abundance in one area and maybe lacked in a different area was reflected in some of the changes that were made this offseason.
I don't understand what that means. Where we lacked, we addressed this offseason. What does he mean by that?
Well, what did they change? They changed around the edges. And I think they did that in part for salary cap reasons. You can't carry third line wingers who are getting paid $3+ million a year when the cap is suddenly flat because of a pandemic for the next few years. And so they go and they get veterans. And I think they realized that they needed another body, a Joe Thornton type, who might have a little bit left to give on the ice, but who has a ton to give off the ice. The Tyson Barrie experiment didn't work.
Yeah.
So they went and they got TJ Brody. You know, I think they realized, obvious statement, that Justin Hall logging 20+ minutes a night on the right side of the defense wasn't a good idea. They wanted to give Travis Dermott a little bit of a buffer as he still tries to find his way in the National Hockey League and figure out who he is. They need a guy like him to take a step this year.
And not to go too far down a rabbit hole on analytics, but you and I have been around a lot of locker rooms where, and this is a real important point and a real important part of a roster construction. And Brian Burke's going to be around here at some point this morning.
8 o'clock.
Yeah. When you start building a team on a spreadsheet and when you start building a team on puck possession and the rest and start projecting what a player is going to be, that's great. Whatever. You have to play in a normal year, 82 games in 180 days. You're going to have, in the other 100, you're going to have 60 practice days. You're going to have travel days. You're going to be landing in Minnesota at 3 in the morning.
After a game in St. Louis the night before.
And you have to play a back-to-back, and it's cold and it's miserable, and your ankle's barking, and your groin's an issue, and you're beat, you're tired, you're exhausted. Okay, what does all this mean? It means it's vital to have adults in the room. It's great to have the kids. It's great to have the kids who can fly. It's great to have the kids who can score. It's great to have the talent.
At their age, their bodies recover quicker, all that.
But at some point, having a Joe Thornton look over and say, hey, kid, cool it, calm down.
Or get your head out of your ass.
Or just take him out for dinner and say, this is how you treat people. This is how you be a pro. I remember when Mark DeRosa came over to the Blue Jays. I said, why are you here? He said, well, talk to Brett Laurie a little bit and just tell him to pump the brakes. This is how you tip. This is how you dress. This is how you conduct yourself. All that matters. He said, Chipper Jones did that for me. That's significant. And a friend of mine, a good buddy of mine from university, is now a firefighter and just joined the force, actually in Ottawa, Scotty. Big Washington football team fan. And their front is awesome, right? Chase Young and Montez Sweat and the rest. And he texts me the Sunday night or the Nate Sudfeld game. And he says, I don't understand why they wouldn't have traded Ryan Kerrigan. You have all these kids. Get some value for Ryan Kerrigan while you can. And I said, Stu, you got a bunch of kids on that line. You need an adult in the D-line room. You got to teach them what time to come into the facility, how to watch tape, what you want to look for, how to lift weight. This is the pros now. We're not in college anymore. And he said, why does that matter? That was his question to me. I said, okay, you just became a firefighter. In your fire hall, when you joined, did you know what you're supposed to do? He said, I had no clue. You know, you do your training, whatever, but just how you... And I said, what'd you do? He said, well, some of the guys, a couple of them were cool with me, and they kind of taught me, showed me the ropes. I said, how is that different in a football building? How is that different in a hockey locker room? You need to have adults around. The analytics are great. The projections are great. But this is a game played by humans. And it's great that Shanahan thinks they've addressed some of those dirty edges. And to me, it's real important to bring in the adults. But the whole thing with the adults is they are the whipped cream and the cherry on top. My question is about the ice cream. Looks good. Looks good at, you know, when you're ordering it. How quickly is it going to melt?
Somebody's going to score 40. Another's going to have 95 points.
And I don't know if chocolate goes to get, if you're going to get a triple scoop, I don't know if chocolate goes well with strawberry and with mango. Individually, they all may be good. I just don't know if the sum of all the parts are all fitting. I like what they did with the whipped cream and the cherry. I just don't know if the actual ice cream is going to come together.
And that's the disjoint, right? The disjoint has been, and this is particularly post-Tavares because amazingly he's become a lightning rod. You actually cannot question John Tavares's individual production for this Maple Leafs team.
Nor Austin Matthews.
But when his salary comes into the equation... Mm-hmm. And the salary, in a salary-capped league, unfortunately, that's always going to be a thing. We'd rather it wasn't, but it is. And what's the point of going on another soliloquy about the salary cap? But when this team, despite its 30 or 40-plus goal scores, looked so disjointed on so many nights last year, lacked such consistency... It is hard sometimes to reconcile the very clear elite individual numbers with, as you said, the overall product.
Mm-hmm.
Why are the numbers so pretty for so many of these guys? Zach Hyman's scoring 20 plus, and now all of a sudden we're worried about having to pay him a ton of cake in unrestricted free agency. Weren't counting on that, flat cap. Why are the individual numbers so good? Why were there so many nights where this team looked listless and disinterested?
And when I hear Brendan Shanahan say, we watched the rest of the playoffs and we went and addressed things, TJ Brody and Wayne Simmons and Joe Thornton, okay, I guess.
We'll find out.
We'll see for next game.
The troll poll is going up on Twitter. We'll tell you about it and get Hugh in as we continue the Leafs-Habs preview coming up. Well, the leadoff Wednesday troll poll is up there on Twitter. You can get me at Scotty Mac Thinks. You can get Arash at Arash Madani. Hugh at Hugh W. Burl. And the station at Fan 590. What would you consider to be a successful season for the Leafs? Your options: Cup champs, Cup finalist, win one or more playoff round, make the playoffs. I always think it's dangerous to use Twitter as some kind of scientific polling strategy. But
really?
Yes.
Why?
Just kind of lick the finger and stick it up and see which way the wind is blowing.
Here. Twitter is not the be-all, end-all.
Well, I need to know what Mark 62193868.
I thought it was the home of Socratic debate. You know, calm, tempered,
rational.
Measured, rational, yeah. Absolutely.
Win one plus playoff round is leading the way so far. We've got 225 votes in the first 20 minutes, 39%. Cup finalists, 32%. So cup champs is third at 16%. Then you got them making the playoffs at 13. So increased expectations on that very unscientific poll, but not out of this world expectations. Is this the new psychological scarring of Maple Leafs fans. They no longer believe that this group can take us to the promised land.
You know what? As long as they try their best and have fun, that's the main thing.
Right? Oh, good Lord. Yeah. I'll tell you what. We gotta change the phrase from cash the checks, because nobody cashes checks anymore. No. It's just direct deposit. But I think they're having fun every couple weeks when the direct deposit comes in.
Yeah.
Keith on the text line at 590-590. The Leafs are about to be an absolute mess.
Hi, Keith.
Already.
Good morning.
Well, good morning,
Happy
Keith.
Opening day to you, Keith.
The hasn't even dropped yet.
The milk's in the fridge, Keith. It suitably replaces piss in your Cheerios.
Incredible.
Knocking on the door of the playoffs is the furthest they will get. That's the finish to Keith's text at 595.
Keith.
Milk instead of piss for the Cheerios, Keith.
Awesome.
He's on it. Man, some people are...
Keith sounds like a Bengals fan.
Yeah, he's probably got the Bermuda Triangle. Yeah. It's Leafs, it's Detroit Lions or Cincinnati Bengals.
The unholy trinity.
It's
not do something, I'm giving up on you. I've given up on you.
Yes, yeah. Say something. Yeah, I'm trying to think of one of those.
Send us more, Keith.
But haven't we missed this, though? I mean, this is great. This is Leafs Nation in full boil. And this goes back to the troll poll question from yesterday, that what fan base will give the Leafs, or will give Leafs fans the hardest time? I think the answer was Leafs fans themselves. There's a duality to a Leaf fan, right? If they win a game, they look good. They're going to win the Stanley Cup. They lose a game, and all of a sudden, it's trade everybody. Get this guy out of here. They're terrible. They can't win with Freddie. Man, I've missed this. This is awesome.
Well, and as we've been saying, there's really no rest for the weary or the whiny this year. I mean, why worry about what happens tonight when we can then just pivot to Friday?
Exactly. Yeah.
And then on Monday morning, we'll come in and we'll break down not only what happened on Friday, but also on Saturday, and we'll preview Monday night's game. And then there will be another one Wednesday. Yep. Like, it's
the gift that keeps on giving.
It's more a baseball schedule than a hockey schedule this year.
Right, and so many back-to-backs against the same team.
And threes and fours.
Right.
When you go out west, or the western teams come here. Yeah. I mean... I think there's going to be a lot that goes on in season that will be more noticeable this year because you have so few opponents. You don't have 30 other teams that you play in some kind of staggered fashion, four within your division, three within your conference outside of your division, and the home and away with the Western Conference teams. You're going to run in, if you're the Maple Leafs, and other teams, it'll work the same way in reverse. But if you're the Maple Leafs, you're going to run into a Canucks team that is on a winning streak and playing well, or could be on a significant cooler and struggling badly. And that's going to affect how certain periods of time on this schedule play out. Are the Toronto Maple Leafs fundamentally better than the Ottawa Senators? Yes. Could the Toronto Maple Leafs get the Ottawa Senators three times in a week where the Senators are playing their best hockey of the season?
And the Leafs are banged up and whatever.
That is all quite possible. And all of a sudden, you get a game or two to overtime, but the Sens take 6 points and you get one or two in that three-game stretch. Like, there's going to be a lot of that going on. It's not going to be Montreal on Saturday, Carolina at the arena down on Scotiabank Arena on Monday, and then maybe New Jersey Wednesday before you fly west for the Western Canadian swing, and you see all these different teams. These are, in some cases, going to be mini playoff series.
You just had Carolina playing the Leafs. Just hit me.
Does
this now mean with COVID protocols that David Ayers cannot be in the arena?
I've picked any other team. I could have just mentioned a random team.
Now, what
team.
Does this mean for the emergency goaltender? Is the question
everybody wants the
is
answer
the
to.
Is the David Ayers story, is that dead for 2021?
Well, it was dead every year up until 2020.
It was then?
Highly unlikely to play out again. Thank God. Yeah, I had a yelling match with Ziggy about that on this.
A yelling match. We should have known then that something was coming in 2020. That night should have been the first indication of, wait a minute, the earth is a little off its axis.
Well, I think what we took originally from that night was Denny Green. Okay. This team is who we thought they were. We were.
And we let them off the hook.
Well, I don't know if we let them off the hook that next day. But I think we were worried that this team was destined for a first-round playoff matchup with Tampa Bay or Boston that wasn't going to go so well. And if you remember, the Leafs weren't locked at that point to finish top three in the division.
Is that the most embarrassing loss in sports history?
Ooh.
Well, the yelling match Ziggy and I had at the time, Ziggy said that was a no-win situation for the Leafs. And not from a media perspective or a fan base perspective, from the hockey people within the league, his argument was, you lose that game, you look terrible. You win that game, and everybody's saying you were losing by two or whatever they were losing by, three. No, when the Zamboni driver came in, you needed a Zamboni driver to overcome the deficit and win the game. No. And I said, Ziggy, take the 2 points. If
Correct.
Everybody's going to yeah. think you're a loser anyway, be a loser with two extra points. And oh, by the way, look at the standings right now. They could use them.
Look, we just had a football season where the Denver Broncos started a quarterback who was a receiver off their practice roster because the quarterback room was wiped out. Now, he had played college football as a quarterback, okay? And New Orleans went in there and won by like 6 or 7 touchdowns in Denver. David Ayers, and this is no slight on David Ayers. David Ayers, the losing to David Ayers is worse than that because at least the kid for Denver was a professional athlete, was a high level quarterback at a major Division I college, knew kind of what was going on in the offense because he ran, you know, he's at practice every day. We're told that the holiday made for TV tournament with the teenagers is a legitimate thing. Well, how often do we see Canada winning preliminary games 16-2? The Leafs should have won 16-4. They lost.
Well,
it's a shame we're not going to have David Ayers.
What was even worse about that was that they were down 3 when Ayers came in. They cut it to 1.
Mm-hmm.
We went into the second intermission, and they came out and were outscored in the third period. And that's when you just looked at it, and they being the Leafs, use my pronouns. That was kind of the moment, if it wasn't clear leading up to it, that there was something wrong with this team. Too many inconsistent nights. And I think that's what fans are asking be repaired this year. Schedule's going to be what it is. You're going to run into some teams on hot streaks, some teams on cold streaks. That could affect what a week looks like. But on paper, this should be the best, if not top two, in the North Division. And the results should, I'm not saying they will, should reflect that.
Do you guys have a feeling that this is finally the year that we get Leafs Habs in the playoffs?
I hope so.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's if they're 1-4 or 2-3... Yeah. Right? They'll meet in the first round, and if they take out their first round opponents respectively, they'll meet in the second round. You know? I think Ottawa misses, but then now we're getting texts saying,
I don't think they're going to be as bad as people seem to think.
Right, but three of seven have to miss.
Yeah.
You know, and some people think that the Winnipeg Jets are going to be one of the top teams in the division, and others think the Jets are going to miss the playoffs. I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, and there's Edmonton, by the way.
There's Edmonton. And then there's Calgary, who poached Vancouver with particularly Markstrom, but also Tanev. Are the Canucks going to take a step back because of the offseason they had, or are they still steering in the right direction? I think there's a lot of question marks here. Did Mark Bergevin's free agency splurge put the Habs into the top four? There's a lot of questions here. I think one of the questions that is answered simply by looking at the rosters straight up, 7 pieces of paper, 7 rosters, is the Leafs have a roster that should finish top 4. So any conversation between now and May is effectively a setup for what is to come once the playoffs begin.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's going to sit back and go, well, you know, a 7-game loss to whoever in the first round, well.
No, not good enough.
Nobody's going to accept a result like they had against Columbus in the bubble 5-game series, the play-in series.
Or it's Boston time. Before that, or Washington before that, or Boston before that.
Yeah. It's time. It really is. It really is. And people are counting on it. I mean, Leafs fans, God knows, they've waited.
Mm-hmm.
And you also, you look around other pro sports and you realize nice things can happen to fan bases that are generally understood to be tortured. Whether that's the 2016 Chicago Cubs on a smaller scale because it wasn't the Super Bowl. Cleveland Browns fans on Sunday night.
Philadelphia Eagles.
It's nice things are allowed for people who don't often have them.
Mm-hmm.
Leafs fans deserve nice things. This team is more than capable of providing those nice things.
You believe it. You believe this team.
I expect
is,
it.
Yeah.
No, I don't know if I believe it or not. I'm setting the expectation.
Yeah.
And no more dilly-dallying and, well, you know, they possessed the puck 53.7% of the game. I got news for you. The best teams in the league possess the puck between 52 and 55% of a hockey game.
You know my favorite
That's
quote?
In 45 to 48% when they don't. How are you playing when you don't have it?
Hugh, huh? Hugh, you know my favorite quote in the history of sports is?
What's
it's
that?
Now 5.5 years old. So it's in its infancy still. It's still a kid.
Okay.
But it came from Scotty Mac's good friend Josh Donaldson when he said,
"That's right,
this
yeah.
isn't the try hard league. This is the get it done league."
Yep.
And there's a real lesson in that line for all of us, no matter what we're doing. This isn't the try hard league. This is the get it done league. And it feels like the Leafs have been the, I don't even know if they've tried hard. The try hard, they've been in the try hard sandbox. While watching the get it done guys
sitting at the kids table.
Yeah.
Well, the
in
less,
a really fancy chair because they got a lot of money.
Yeah.
The less discussed part of that quote that Josh Donaldson gave that day, and that was on a Sunday afternoon in Houston after the Jays had been swept by the Astros in a 4-game series down in Texas. And at that time, Houston wasn't good yet. They ended up making the playoffs that year. And emerged.
They had their walk before they run.
But it was May. Like, it was still early in the season, so show us Houston. And, of course, they ended up showing us. But Donaldson, this isn't the try league, it's the get it done league. I expect, and I'm paraphrasing, I expect the front office will go and get us the players who can help us get it done. Implying, of course, that there were people kicking around who were not aiding in the general goal of, you know, going out and winning baseball games.
And so for this Leaf team, I suppose Thornton, Brody, and Simmons are the ones who are now going to help us get out of the first round because we have been unable
well,
to.
Well, as you talked about it earlier in the hour, it's the accountability in the locker room. Sportsnet 590 The Fan is your home for the Leafs and Habs tonight right after Tim and Sid. The season opens down at Scotiabank Arena. And we got a gift to give away. Well, it's not a gift. You have to earn it. But $100 in Untuck It gift cards up for grabs. We play all or nothing. If you want to be our contestant, 416-870-0590. 416-870-0590. Call now. We play all or nothing next. Yay or nay at the top of the hour.
Time to play All or Nothing with Ziggy and Scotty Mac on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We had a winner yesterday, so the All or Nothing jackpot is back at $100. All or Nothing, three true or false questions, which you need to get all right or all wrong. So how you answer question one, correctly or incorrectly, informs how you need to answer questions two and three. Our contestant this morning is Sue in Aurora. Hello, Sue.
Good morning. How are you?
We're very well. We wish you good luck. And Arash has question number one.
Well, Sue, this might be the year the Leafs and the Habs finally meet in the playoffs. Last time that happened, 1979. Is that true or false?
I think it's true.
So true, the Smashing Pumpkins wrote a song about that year. And some pretty decent people were born in that year, too. Not naming names. Sue, you're in good shape. You just got to get the next two correct. Hugh, question two.
Okay. All right, Sue, let's pick it up from there. We all know the Leafs last won the Stanley Cup way back in 1967. The team they beat was none other than those darn Montreal Canadiens. True or false?
I would say that was true.
Yeah. Leafs won it in six games. Jim Pappin of the series-winning goal. Davey Keon, the MVP.
One more to go, Sue, and then $100 in Nantucket gift cards are yours. This could be the year that Austin Matthews gets Hart Trophy consideration as the NHL's most valuable player. No Maple Leafs player has ever won the Hart Trophy. True or false?
Oh, boy. I think that's false.
Yes. Good for you. Awesome stuff. Ted Kennedy in 1955 and Arash's favorite, Babe Pratt, in 1944.
I'll let you, boy.
Hart Trophy winners representing the Maple Leafs. Congratulations, Sue and Aurora. $100 in Nantucket gift cards are yours. We'll attempt to give away $100 in Nantucket gift cards at this time tomorrow when we play All or Nothing once again. Adnan Virk at 8:30. Brian Burke, it's the Burke-Virk Hour returning to lead off. He's at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. Stu Cowan is a columnist with the Montreal Gazette. We'll talk Habs at 7:30. Up next, a Leafs and hockey-flavored yay or nay. We're going to indoctrinate Arash into yay or nay. Next. You have, and Arash Madani is with us all week. Ziggy is on safari somewhere, we think.
Riding elephants.
He could be riding elephants from his living room to his kitchen, as far right. as we know, but he's certainly wherever he is, he's on safari. Arash Madani in all week. You've never been a part of yay or nay.
I have not.
Well, you need to know.
What was that sound effect we just heard?
You need to know what you're getting into. If we present a hypothetical scenario to you,
okay,
and you think that scenario is going to happen, you will say yay.
Ooh. Yay!
If
won't say it that way.
You don't think it's going to happen, you will say nay. That would be
sorry,
the
horse. Sorry, what was that, Vic?
Be the horse sound.
Kirk Cousins is here.
You've reached your quota. One a day at least.
Oh,
one
have
a,
to.
One a day keeps the doctor away. Is that the...
Keith in Ottawa has given me hope. He's given me life.
Keith in Ottawa is... So he crapped all over the Leafs at 590-590 in the first 10 minutes of the show. Then he signed himself as Keith. Then he came back with Keith in Ottawa. So that's a little telltale. You know, you're living in Ottawa, you probably feel a way about the Maple Leafs. But he has gone on to text in and say there is no worse team than the Canadiens. So I guess on that we can agree. Keep them coming, Keith. He's not letting you down. Leafs and Senators, well, they'll play on the weekend. It's the Leafs and Habs tonight. That would be me digging myself out of my own mess. Leafs and Habs tonight, 12 hours away on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The season opens. And with that in mind, it is time for the 2021 NHL edition of Yay or Nay. Now, I want to clarify this first one, Arash. Scoring, I'm going to define here as goals scored, not points total. So yay or nay, someone other than Austin Matthews will lead the Leafs in scoring, i.e. goals total. Yay or nay?
Yay.
Yay!
What? Oh, drop a name.
Mitch Marner.
Mitch Marner's going to score more goals than Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
Oh. Explain. I'm on the edge of my seat. I feel like I could give you big time odds on this one and still come away.
Oh, okay. What kind of odds are we looking at? Are you saying big time odds on I get the field and you get Matthews, or just on Marner?
What would the number be? I think Austin Matthews is going to score 40 goals if he stays healthy. 35 to 40 goals.
So that would mean Austin Matthews would be minus 150 to lead the... It'd be minus 150 for Austin Matthews,
okay,
and
so,
plus 120 for the field.
Okay, so I am focused on you saying Marner. You're saying it could be Tavares, it could be...
I'm taking the field.
Whoever, I'm taking the field.
Yeah. I'm saying it won't be Thornton, but I'm taking the field.
Won't be Thornton.
Yeah.
Thank you for going out on
that
particular ledge. I think Austin Matthews, 32 at minimum was my prediction. I wouldn't be surprised if he's all the way up at 40 in 56 games. He's got to play the whole season, of course. But I think he's going to average about 0.6 of a goal a game, as he typically does. And he will lead the team. So my answer for that is nay. We got to come up on some resolution. I'm a bit of a bet maker, gambling addict on this show only. I got to figure out what's going on with James Cebulski. Silent Vic and I are apparently in on something where we're going to bet that the Leafs finish ahead of the Habs, and Silk Gentile, our producer, and Hugh Burrell, who love the Habs. Got to make a bet with them. Got to put something on the
Ottawa
line.
Ottawa doesn't count. I mean, Ottawa's... By the way, game ball to Eugene Melnyk. That was a heck of a Tuesday for Gene.
Going to get 6,000 fans in the stands.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the first time in 4 or 5 years that happened. Well, dazzing. So we want to come up then with a bet, you and I. We'll think about it through the rest of the show. We've got until the end of the week. I've got Matthews leading the Leafs in scoring. You've got somebody not named Matthews.
I'll take the field, yeah.
Okay. Yay or nay, Sheldon Keefe will load manage at least one of his players not named Joe Thornton, Jason Spezza, Wayne Simmonds this season. Goaltenders don't count, of course. Sheldon Keefe will load manage at least one of his players not named Thornton, Spezza, or Simmonds this season. Yay or nay?
I'll take it to a further. I think Sheldon Keefe will load manage at least four of his players at least once this season.
Yay!
I'm yaying that too.
Yeah.
I'm sticking to my guns on this. I think you can sit Austin Matthews down and say, pal, we got 10 games in 17 nights. This is a quick ramp up. Hadn't been preseason action. Shorter training camp than usual. We haven't played a ton of hockey in the last 10 months. I mean, 5 games against Columbus in the bubble and a couple of tee-up games prior to that. Played 7 or 8 games in the last 10 months. We don't want you pulling a groin, yanking a hammy, hurting a quad, soft tissue. We're going to sit you. Same with Mitch, same with Willie, whatever. I think it's the right idea. I'm not saying they're going to do it. And every former hockey player we've had on this show say, well, we want to play. We want to play. We are not conditioned not to play. But I think that's why you have responsible people in the building who sit you down and say, this is what is best for you over the long term. We want you healthy in June when we're in the second or third round of the playoffs. Oh, here's one for you. Frederik Andersen will sign a contract extension before the end of the season. He will not become an unrestricted free agent next year. Yay or nay?
So I'm going nay on the first part. I think Frederik Andersen will not sign an extension before the end of the season. Now, won't become a UFA next year. There's a gap there
between the end of season and.
But I do not see Frederik Andersen signing an extension during this regular season.
I'll nay that one as well. Yeah. But I'm going to take that question and extend it one step further, because this is the more interesting conversation. Yay or nay, Frederik Andersen receives a raise on his $5 million AAV on his next contract, whoever it is that he signs that contract with.
Yeah, and that's a tough one, because if it's with the Leafs, it's nay. If it's elsewhere, it's so hard to know, because what's the cap number going to be? What's the floor number going to be? What's the need going to be for a team in that department? Where's their salary structure? That's a tough one.
Here's the other factor. We live in the 1A, 1B world now. We still have some teams that are pulling true 1-2s, but even the Montreal Canadiens, with an eight-figure goaltender, a first ballot Hall of Famer in Carey Price, an Olympic gold medalist, have gone expensive on Jake Allen as a backup, realizing, especially in this shortened season with so many games and so many days, that they need a capable, qualified backup who can carry a significant load. I just wonder, Arash, and part of it might also be salary suppression. I don't think we will see, unless we're 20 years down the road and the salary cap is up in the 110, 120 range, mm-hmm. and salaries appropriately inflate to reflect that, I don't think we'll see another eight-figure goaltender for a long time.
Really?
Because I think you're going to see a Frederik Andersen, who is the 1A of a 1A, 1B equation, play 50 to 55 games, and you're going to apportion salary commensurate with that number of games, and then you're going to have a guy who's the 1B who plays 30 to 32 games a year, 35 games perhaps, and
it's just
you're going to
so
pay
hard.
Him to do that.
And to find a real franchise goaltender is so difficult to do. It just feels like the position, these guys can fall off the cliff in a hurry. So it's not just the $10 million plus, it's the term and how you're on the hook for
it. Well, and there are lessons to be learned out there. Sergei Bobrovsky may bounce back in Florida.
Yeah.
But that first year of his was atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're the Panthers looking at eight figures committed to that guy for the next 6 years, if he plays like Ilya Brizgalov did in Philadelphia, that is a mortifying contract. To have
Why
on
you
the
have
books.
To be mad?
And Bobrovsky's nowhere near as funny as Ilya Brizgalov.
No. Not scared of Bears. He's scared of Panthers.
Mm. And Lightning.
And Lightning, yes. Yay or nay, there will be at least five games postponed this season, canceled outright because of COVID-19 protocols. So not just postponed, but canceled outright. There will be teams who play fewer games than others when this is all said and done.
Not only do I have the yay on that, I will
take
the over on that.
This is going to be complicated.
Mm-hmm.
The Dallas Stars.
And I think it's going to be less in the North Division, but I think it's going to be a lot more everywhere else.
Well.
Freedom.
They're going to have to be disciplined. And that's hard over a 3 or 4 month period of time. You literally should not be leaving the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, forget some of these jurisdictional rules. They're too loose. They're too loose.
I don't know if you saw this. George Hill from the Oklahoma City Thunder. The NBA announced a bunch of stricter protocols yesterday. Hill last night said, quote, I'm a grown man. I'm going to do what I want to do. If I want to go see my family, I'm going to see my family. They can't tell me I have to stay in the room 24/7. If it's that serious, then maybe we shouldn't be playing. It's life. No one's going to be able to cancel their whole life for this game. I wonder how many people are like George Hill out there playing professional sports, but are just staying quiet, but believe the same things.
more than one.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, the NFL. I just keep coming back to the NFL. How the league handled the COVID stuff pre-bye weeks.
Yes.
When they could finagle things. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, all the teams had their bye weeks. And it was just three-point stance, brick wall in front of you. Run through it, boys. You're playing.
You're playing.
Like, if the Browns didn't have Kevin Stefanski and Joel Bitonio and Denzel Ward in week three, they probably would have had that game pushed back. You think about it, right? I mean, look what happened with Pittsburgh and Tennessee and the Scotty. Effect that that had on the Bills' schedule. Kansas City played in Buffalo on a weeknight because Scotty, of it and all that.
Denver Broncos played a game without a quarterback.
That's true.
And it's not that Denver played Houston and the game was irrelevant in the standings. That's a New Orleans just hosted a playoff game.
That's right.
New Orleans has home field against Tampa this week. I mean, that's a big win for the Saints because of it.
New Orleans needed to go in there and get the 2 points. Regardless of how it looked, they went in there and they got the 2 points.
Didn't David Ayers themselves.
And nobody's talking about, well, you just brought it up, but nobody's harping on New Orleans at Denver week 13 or whatever it was.
Right.
People are talking about the Saints and the Bucks in a divisional round matchup with a lot on the line.
The good guys said New Orleans minus 14 that night.
Yeah.
We like him.
We got to get him on the show before the week's over.
Yeah.
We got to get Gibby on the show. He needs his tennis update from you.
He does. He does. Mr. Tennis.
Yay or nay, by the end of the year, we will see a hockey game with fans in attendance in Canada. I'm naying that one.
End of this season or end of the calendar year? If it's end of this season, nay.
End of this season is what nay. We're talking yeah. about here. I don't think there's a chance of that happening. Yay or nay, here we go again. Another Rocket Richard trophy for the Great Eight, Alexander Ovechkin. I'm naying that one.
I'm naying that one too.
And you know why? Le numéro 34.
Oh,
yay!
Baby.
In the bleu et blanc.
Excusez-moi.
No rouge, pal. Just the bleu et blanc.
Okay.
Boston scores 40. You should probably take it home. And 40 and 56 would be
incredible.
Yeah. Mike Babcock.
Your friend.
Got to play good. Mike Babcock will be with NBC all season long. The only chance he will get at a coaching gig in the near future is if the Seattle Kraken hire him to be their first bench boss. Mike Babcock will be with NBC all season long. Yay or nay?
Yay.
Yay!
I'm yaying that one, and here's why. It's really got nothing to do with Mike Babcock and asking rookies to make lists of people who they think are lazy. It's... if you fire a coach in season, you're using your assistant as an interim.
Correct.
Because you're not bringing somebody into your bubble or into your outfit. They got to quarantine or do whatever they do for two and a half weeks. Like, what are you going to do?
Scotty, owners have had no revenues for how long now? Mike Babcock's being paid $6.5 million by the Leafs. Is Mike Babcock going to be offered more than $6.5 million in the middle of a season to go somewhere? Nay.
The horsey sneezing sound on that one.
Yes.
Yay or nay, the winner of the East, which could be perceived as the toughest division in the NHL. And this is, of course, the Rangers, the Islanders, the Penguins, the Flyers, the Devils. The winner of the East will be the Washington Capitals. Yay or nay?
Nay.
You're taking the field?
I'm taking the field. I'm just playing the odds
play
here.
Play it safe, pal.
Wait a minute. I get everybody?
It ain't going to be the Rangers. It ain't going to be the Islanders. Islanders
Why not?
Should make the playoffs. You know, it's going to be the Flyers. Flyers should win that division.
Pittsburgh?
Yeah. I just think attrition catches up to them at some point. But who knows? I mean, Sid and Evgeny could have great years. But I think one of the two Pennsylvania teams, I'm leaning toward Philadelphia. I think the Philly Flyers are going to win that division. I think Gritty is going to be partying it up in isolation in eastern Pennsylvania. And the last one. Now, this year, there's a 75% chance of this coming true because there will be a Canadian team represented in the Final Four, just the way things shake out. Yay or nay, the Stanley Cup champion will come from a U.S. city, continuing a trend that has lasted since 1994.
Yay.
Yay!
I gotta yay that one, too.
Mm. Yay!
I thought you were gonna yell at me.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm from the state of Missouri on the Leafs. I've laid out the expectations, but you gotta show me. You gotta show me, once you get into the playoffs, that you can, A, get through your division, and then B, go toe-to-toe with, presuming that they play, I mean, I don't know, how are they going to seed them 1-4 and 2-3, reseed them based on record? I'm assuming they're going to play an East team. I should probably check that out. It could be a Central team, could be a West team. They bubble up. It's not going to be relevant. But can you beat a Philadelphia? Can you...
Columbus.
Take a St. Louis Blues team down to Vegas Golden Knights, Colorado Avalanche.
You haven't even talked about Dallas. Came two wins away last year.
Your Blue Jackets.
My Blue Jackets.
Winners of the Central Division, I presume, right? Got all those games against Detroit. Got to take advantage of the weak sisters in the Central Division. Should be great, though. Leafs and Habs. Tonight on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and we are all over it getting the... season preview, not just out of the way, but we're working through it. Brian Burke at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. We will talk about roster construction. We'll discuss with him his thoughts on the North Division in general, some of the potentially unpredictable scenarios that could play out. Like, what if you go west and you catch a team on a hot streak and you're not playing so well, and on paper, you're better than them, but they take three straight games from you. That could do a lot in the standings. And so could it go the other way? The Leafs get on a hot streak, win six in a row. Well, you're playing your division all season long. Brian Burke on all of those topics. Adnan Verk for his weekly hit at 8:30. And coming up next, from the Montreal Gazette, he has been a columnist with that paper for the better part of four decades. He knows the Habs inside out. It was an eventful offseason for Montreal. Marc Bergevin continues to plug away there. Talk about a cat with nine lives, or so it seems. Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette. We tee up the Leafs and Habs from the Habs perspective next. I notice you keep staring at your watch, Arash. I can just tell you. It's 11 hours and 30 minutes.
Yes.
Until puck drop. Leafs and Habs tonight on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The long-awaited start of the NHL season. 56 games. The North Division. The seven Canadian teams. How will it all shake down? Well, a factor in all of this, a potential wild card in all of this, arguably a team that could go either way in all of this, is tonight's opponent down at Scotiabank Arena. The Montreal Canadiens are in town. He has seen a lot through the years covering this team. Longtime Montreal Gazette columnist Stu Cowan is with us this morning. Stu, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing great. So, I mean, there has been a lot of changes, and some significant to this Montreal Canadiens roster. It feels like Marc Bergevin is a cat on perhaps his sixth or seventh life here. What do you make, as you look at the roster on paper, for whatever that's worth, of the changes the Habs have made entering this season?
The most noticeable thing being at the training camp was just the size. I mean, the Canadiens have always been, at least in recent years, a small, fast team. They're huge now. You know, you throw Josh Anderson in there, you have Joel Edmondson, Romanov on defense, a Russian rookie. Now, everybody on defense now, all six of their starting defensemen are at least 6 foot tall. And there's only one of them under 200 pounds, and that's Kulak, who's like 192. So this is a big team now, but they're still fast. And the thing they have that this team hasn't had in years is depth. You know, you look on the taxi squad, you've got Michael Frolik and Corey Perry. You know, they both cleared waivers yesterday. You know, two veterans of Stanley Cup rings that aren't even on this team. You know, 2 years ago or last year, they would have probably been on the second or third line. So there's depth now. There's some scoring depth. And for the first time in a long time, as I've read a couple of times, I think the Canadiens fans have some hope. I mean, the excitement in this city leading into this game thing is just, it's huge. I mean, people are excited that there's you know, the other big difference, too, is, you know, for the last three seasons, this is a team that's played about $8 million under the cap. And in a salary cap league, it's hard to compete when you're not spending all the money available to you. This goes back to when, you know, Andrei Markov and Radulov both left. Mark Bergevin got nothing in return, and he seemed to have no plan B at the time. And he was stuck with this money, and nobody wanted to take it. Nobody wanted to come to Montreal. So now, you know, he found some people in the offseason who wanted the money, Josh Anderson, Tyler Toffoli, you know, Joel Edmondson, as I mentioned. They now have a real backup goalie in Jake Allen. So, yeah, this is a much different-looking team and a much better-looking team also.
And they have goaltender depth, Stu.
Yeah.
Is there an idea of how they're going to manage the workload of Carey Price and Jake Allen?
Claude Julien hasn't said specifically, but he said it's not going to be a case where Carey Price plays 45 games and Jake Allen plays 11. So that gives you an idea right there. He's going to play more than 11 games. So you're probably looking maybe 20. Carey Price, you know, even Carey said during training camp, he's not a guy who likes to give up his net. So that's going to be an issue too. Like when they're going to have to tell Carey he's not going in goal. The other thing Carey said that's going to help him, he thinks, is the fact that they can carry three goalies this year.
Right.
So he won't be able, you know, he won't have Charlie Lindgren to be the third goalie. So Price won't have to be in practice all the time. As he said, practice is important and it's important for his game. But instead of standing in the net and getting bombarded with shots in practice, he'll be able to maybe step to the side with goalie coach Stefan Waite and work on some of the little technical things he wants to work on. So I think that's really going to help him. Plus the fact, Josh, I mean, last year, Claude Julien, he got upset at me during a post-game press conference when I asked him about if he was overplaying Carey Price. You know, he played him like 11 games in a row, but in close defense, he had no real choice. Like, he had nobody else to put in there. He put somebody else in there, it was like throwing away the game. So now he has that option to put in another guy with a Stanley Cup ring as your backup goalie. And, you know, knock on wood, nothing would happen to Carey Price, but in past season, if Carey Price got hurt, season was over. And that's not the case this year again. So again, it just goes back to what I was saying at the beginning, just the depth this team has is probably the depth and size are the two biggest things that I've noticed.
So when Claude gets mad at you, what happens?
Actually, I get along well with Claude. He ended his news conference. That's a stupid question. I'm fed up of answering this, and he ended the news conference. But no, Claude's a good guy, but he had a lot of pressure on him last year. And part of the pressure was that he had nobody else to put in goal. I mean, yeah. Charlie Lindgren, in his defense, there's a reason Charlie Lindgren wasn't drafted, right? I mean, any player wasn't drafted. They just weren't that good at that point in their career. Charlie Lindgren's a real battler. He'll fight, and he's not a big guy, though. He's sort of a throwback goalie. He reminds you of Rogie Vachon or even like a ball hockey goalie. He's bouncing and diving all over the place, making saves. He's not your sort of 6'4" technical goalie you see in the NHL today. And that'll help, too. Like, Charlie Lindgren is the third goalie. He's going to be happy to be here. He'll work hard in practice. He'll battle in practice. The guys really like him. So the goaltending situation, you can make a pretty good argument that the Canadiens have the best goaltending situation in the NHL right now.
You really haven't made it, Stu, until you get a coach pissed off at you on Zoom. right?
That's true. That's true. I guess Tortorella will probably.
Yes.
Do they open tonight? That might happen tonight.
How do you yell at somebody through a computer screen and just start pointing at a laptop? Like that.
It would be even better, Stu, if your camera wasn't on. It'd just be the black screen with like the silhouette, and he gets mad at the silhouette. Yeah, I think that would have been better.
You got the PR person next to him hitting mute on the microphone.
Right.
All that stuff. Start controlling the message. What
for guys covering the Blue Jackets, that might be a challenge this year.
There you go.
Tortorella pissed off on Zoom.
With Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette, what would be, and this is in line with the question you asked Claude that upset him last year, but what would be the fair assessment, the objective assessment of Carey Price's play over the last two or three seasons?
Inconsistent. And that's one of the reasons the Canadians have struggled. Carey's gone through periods in each of the last few seasons where he's been bad for, you know, 6, 7, 8-game stretches. The Canadians had 2 8-game losing streaks last year. I mean, it's not all on Carey Price, obviously, but part of it is, you know, when you lose that many games in a row, you think the goalie might steal one, especially when you're paying the goalie $10 million a year. It hasn't happened. And I think part of that goes back to, again, the fact that he was just playing so many games. And he's also getting older. I mean, you know, Father Time's undefeated. Carey Price is no exception to that rule. But what Price showed in the bubble last year in Toronto is just how well he can play when he's rested. And, you know, he's fantastic. And to go back to the depth I was talking about, the last two times the Canes have been in the playoffs, they lost in the first round. I mean, the win over Pittsburgh, the NHL doesn't consider the playoffs, right? So they lost to the Rangers in 2017, I guess it was, and they lost to Philadelphia this year. Both times, Carey Price had a goals against average well under 2, and he had a save percentage in the 930s. I mean, that should be enough to win a series, but they didn't have any scoring depth. They just couldn't score enough goals. Now, if this team gets into the playoffs, and I think they will, they have some scoring depth. You go back to when they lost to the Rangers. You know, Max Pacioretty, I remember after they were eliminated, was almost in tears in the locker room. He didn't score a goal in that series, and he took a lot of heat in Montreal for it. But, you know, if you're a coach and you only have to really shut down one scorer on the other team in a 7-game series, it's not that hard. It'll be more difficult now. The Canes' top line of Dano, Gallagher, and Tatar isn't their top line now. I mean, you know, they have a sort of 1A, 1B, and 1C lines now. Their top line should be Suzuki with Drouin and Anderson. So that's, you know, right there you have, you know, better matchups for the Dano, Gallagher, Tatar line, less pressure on them to score. I mean, Brendan Gallagher's been the only consistent goal scorer they've really had for the last few years. And Mark Bergevin is really counting heavily on Josh Anderson. You know, he took a gamble on him, hoping, you know, the big power forward. He had a horrible year last year in Columbus, scoring only one goal. He needed season-ending shoulder surgery. He traded Max Domi to Columbus to get him, give Anderson a long-term contract. So he's going to be one of the keys for this team this season. The other two keys are obviously the two young centers. You got Nick Suzuki and Jesperi Kotkaniemi. They played really well in the bubble last season, but that was a 10-game sample. You know, they both struggled during the regular season. Kotkaniemi got sent down to Laval. Suzuki didn't. I think he had one assist in the last 9 games of the regular season. He sort of hit a wall. So now Suzuki's 21, Kotkaniemi's 20. They're counting heavily on these guys, but you know they have some better players around them. Suzuki and Drouin had really good chemistry in the bubble last year. You throw Josh Anderson, a power forward, on with them. That should really help. Kotkaniemi's playing with his fellow Finn Joel Armia. They had chemistry last year. You had Tyler Toffoli, a natural goal scorer with them. So that looks good. So as I said, you have three lines there that should be able to score. And then your fourth line, you have Paul Byron and Arturi Lehkonen, two veterans with Jake Evans, who's a young center who played really well in the bubble last year, a 7th-round draft pick, former University of Notre Dame captain, sort of a diamond in the rough that the Canadiens have found, who fits in well in that fourth center spot. So as I said, lots of depth on this team, and there's a reason for Montreal fans to be excited.
Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette. Now, Stu, I don't want to age you, but you've been with the paper for a while. Before social media, before even this internet thing.
And back when I had hair.
And back when you had hair. And you've had different roles there. Just pivoting away from hockey for a minute. It feels like the talk of, since COVID hit, the talk of the return to baseball in Montreal has quieted some. We just saw the Rays get to the World Series and they promptly dismantled their team. What's, Has there been much scuttlebutt in Montreal on a potential return of the Expos in, over the last 6 months or so?
There's been some. I mean, there's some members of the Montreal media who are real hardcore baseball fans and lived and breathed with the Expos who really get excited every time something comes up. I grew up with the Expos. I was a member of the Rusty Staub fan club. I remember 50-cent bleacher seats at Jerry Park, some of my best memories of my youth through the Expos. I just don't see it happening, personally.
You don't, huh?
I don't. I mean, this idea of, like, does a team go, a team half the games in Tampa and half the games in Montreal, like, what's that connection?
And why would you build a stadium for 40 games?
Why would you build two stadiums? Why would they want a stadium? I think the owner in Tampa is just using Montreal as leverage, personally, to try and get a new stadium in Tampa. But, I mean, so what happens if, you know, they start the season in Tampa, they play, you know, 81 games or whatever, and they come to Montreal and they're already 10 games out of first place? Mm. You know, and people are going to pack the stadium. I think, you know, Montreal's are really an event city. It's become an event city. The Grand Prix is an event. The tennis tournament here in the summer is an event. Canadians games are an event. I just don't know if the baseball market's there for 81 baseball games a year. And to have half of the games, it just makes no sense. Okay, so let's say, okay, the Leafs are going to play half their games in Toronto and play half their games in Carolina. Like, what? No, how does that make any sense? How are you going to have fan support in both of those cities? So to me, I know Stephen Bronfman has a lot of money and he wants it to happen. And there's the family history. His father, Charles, owned the team. Guys who have a lot of money can make things happen. But he's not going to build a stadium with his own money, I don't think. And, try and get a government after COVID and all the financial hardships that governments and companies, everything have been hit for. Are you going to give out money to build a stadium so that for a billionaire owner so that multimillionaire players can play in it? I personally just don't see it happening. And that's from someone, as I said, the Expos were a big part of my childhood, and Rusty Staub was my first sports hero.
Mm. Well, that less than positive note. I had dreams of 37,000 seat stadium right in the downtown core, and an American League East opponent for the Blue Jays. Could you imagine those, Stu? 19 games a year, Toronto, Montreal. Oh, it'd be amazing.
They missed their chance there after that 93 season and the season when they almost won, and they had the plans for the new stadium right beside the Bell Center. The land was set up, everything was there. There was plans drawn up for it. There was people were excited. The Expos were really good. The year they almost won the World Series before the strike wiped everything out. And then in the off season, instead of going for it, they got rid of all their players. And they had their fire sale, and that sort of killed baseball. But I mean, the fire sale was a reason. You look, even the year that year when they were the best team, best team in baseball, their attendance was horrible until later in the season. When people caught on and said, "Okay, this is a good team. Let's go now." I just don't think there's enough baseball fans in Montreal right now. I think a new outdoor stadium, I think it would be popular for the first season. But they're talking about not having a roof on the stadium. And even Charles Bronfman, I interviewed him years ago, and he said it'd be hard. Baseball can't survive in Montreal without a roof on a stadium. I mean, you look at the weather, April, May, and if the Canadians are in the playoffs, people aren't going to go. If the weather's lousy, people aren't going to go. And so you have the first couple of months of the season, the weather is bad. The last month of the season, the weather is bad. And another thing Montreal has shown, not only is this an event city, it's a city that only supports winning teams. You look what happened to the Alouettes when they started losing. People, Molson Stadium used to be packed every game. It started emptying out when they weren't winning. So I just think we all grew up with baseball, have that soft spot, and Nos Amores, the Expos were called. But being realistic, I just don't see it happening. I'd love to be proven wrong. It'd be fantastic if baseball came back here, but I personally can't see it.
Stu, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for doing this, getting up this morning. Tonight will be fun, and so will this entire season. Let's knock on wood and hope COVID doesn't derail things. We'll catch up again as the year goes on. Apparently the Leafs and Habs play a lot.
Looking forward to it, guys. Have a great day.
Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette. Something to chew on for great Canadian meat. A Leafs-Habs playoff series.
Mm.
Hasn't happened in your life, Arash? And my mom was 7.5 months pregnant the last time it did. 1979. What would that look like and feel like in this city? We'll talk about it next. guessing this isn't a shout to Joe Thornton's in my birth year. This is more the last time the Leafs and Habs met in the playoffs. 1979, baby. Something to chew on for great Canadian meat. What would it look like if the Leafs and Habs were to meet in the playoffs? As likely as it has been since 1979. I mean, you got to factor in that the Leafs were in the Campbell Conference Norse Division through the 80s, and Campbell became the Western in the 90s and all that, and the Habs have always been in the Wales or East. But from, what, 1998 onward, the possibility has existed, and it hasn't happened because the two teams haven't been good at the same time. And in the years where it could, it's been 1-8-2-7-3-6-4-5. And in the more recent years where it's division in rounds 1 and 2, well, we've been bumping into Boston.
And the closest thing we've seen to it has been the Montreal-Ottawa thing, which...
And that was...
It's not that the temperature went up in a hurry. The temperature reached boiling point at
right
puck
away.
Drop.
Yeah. This...
What was Brandon Prust talking about Paul McLean?
And he talking about a guy...
The googly eye, the fat googly eye walrus or something. I mean, it's just awesome. J.G. Pageau out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
It was great stuff. And if that is how that series unfolded, those series unfolded, what would this turn into?
And for context, I suppose we can look at Toronto, Ottawa, early 2000s, but it's viewed far differently up there, not just because they lost, but because Ottawa is the baby sibling.
Right.
Right? Little sibling syndrome or whatever. We look at Ottawa and go, well, whatever. Nice of you to have a team. We feasted on you. But Toronto, Montreal, that has historic roots with your grandparents and great-grandparents.
And as we've learned, crowds turn it up. Right now in front of empty buildings, it's just... flat and empty. And Scotty, you and I worked in Ottawa, and too polite to hate. In Montreal, oh yeah, they hate.
Yeah.
And they're fiercely proud and defend their own. So
there's not a je ne sais quoi. There's a je sais quoi.
Yeah.
I don't know what's the positive, not
they're,
the negative.
They're Saquon Barkley
And there will be Habs fans, like, in a normal world where people are allowed in the arena, there will be Habs fans at Scotiabank Arena, and there will be a contingent of Leafs fans at the Bell Center, and it would be gloves off, man. And it would be fun, too, because our parents' generation, this would be like nostalgia for them.
Mm-hmm.
They experienced all of that stuff in the 60s and 70s and what have you. I think it would be absolutely incredible. And if you said, would you rather have those two teams play in an empty arena or not play a playoff series at all? I would take it in an empty arena.
Sure.
Just to see it.
And ideally, round two, with a lot more on the line.
We, for the right to be the Canadian representative in the final four. Something to chew on for great Canadian meat. Good Show has Donald Fehr, the National Hockey League Players Association head, at 9:30. As we continue to tee up the Leafs and Habs on Sportsnet 590, The Fan tonight, Adnan Virk at 8:30. Up next from Hockey Night in Canada, the NHL on Sportsnet, our pal Brian Burke. Next.
I think we got a pretty good lineup. We've all our best young players have all aged a little bit, so now they're all early 20s. So I think they have the maturity now as well as still the youthful exuberance. I think it's time for them to prove that they can play. We've been in the playoffs, I think, 3 years in a row now, but lost the first round. And I think it's time for the next step. They've done a lot of learning. They've brought veterans in that have been there, done that to help them along that way. And I think that's their biggest thing. And from there, they just have to prove that they can do it.
Wendell Clark on leadoff yesterday morning. And tonight's tonight, Leafs, Habs, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, the season opener, 56-game schedule. Leafs will have six opponents, all in Canada, the North Division. The top four teams will make it. And tonight is the first of 10 games in 17 days to start the season. To preview it, Brian Burke of Hockey Night in Canada, the NHL on Sportsnet, is with us. Happy New Year, Berkey. How are you?
I'm good, Scotty. How are you?
Excellent. So, listen, let's just let's go right to the hockey executive to put the fans into their place and give us the level of expectation. You look at this Leafs roster and you compare it with the six other North Division Canadian-based teams. Where do you think the Leafs should be when we hit mid-May and play regular season game number 56?
Well, I like the changes they've made. I put them as second-best team in the Canadian division for me. I really like the changes they made. I like TJ Brody. I like Wayne Simmons. I like Joe Thornton. I like Zach Bogosian. So all upgrades in areas where they needed him. Again, I question the fit with Joe Thornton. Not that he fits in everywhere. He's a wonderful human being, but I question whether that addressed their biggest positional need with their last bit of cap space. But I like the changes they've made. I think the team they're playing is the best team in the division.
How so?
How so?
Yeah. What makes Montreal the best?
Well, I like the changes they made better.
Yeah. I wonder how, Brian, they're going to manage their goaltending situation, you know, with Price and Allen. How would you approach that in such a compressed schedule?
I think they're in the best position of any team in the league, goaltending-wise, in terms of being able to pick when Carey Price plays enough games to be sharp but rested for the playoffs. But they've got a capable guy to put in any time that they think Price needs a rest. The schedule that you see today is not the schedule that we're going to play. There will be COVID outbreaks, there will be positive tests, and the schedule will get even more compressed. And the league has built in days off to accommodate COVID-19 outbreaks. So that schedule that you see, as compressed and as awful looking as it is, will be even worse.
With Brian Burke, do you think load management, Berkey, could extend beyond goaltending this year, which of course you have to do anyway? You got a 50-game guy and a 30-game guy, typically how it is now. But do you think it will extend beyond goaltenders to players and not just guys Joe Thornton's age? Could we see guys in their prime getting nights off in an attempt to avoid soft tissue injuries?
I think you'll see that, but not right away. And I think it'll be tied to some kind of nagging pain. In other words, I don't think a healthy, even a 40-year-old, is going to ask for days off, even in this compressed schedule. We've always given players load maintenance days, but they're called practice days. I don't understand the NBA where they say, we're going to give this guy a night off. Give him a night off when they don't play. Let him skip practice. That, to me, is just as grueling as a game. And so, to me, we've done load management. The year we won the Cup, Sammy Paulson didn't practice in the conference finals or the finals. He was too banged up. Never practiced once. And that was our load maintenance with him.
I'm just thinking, with all the games in such a compressed period of time, and you're pointing out, Berkey, it's likely to get even more compressed once COVID cases crop up and all that. Just 10 and 17, that is not quite a baseball schedule, but it is closer to a baseball schedule than a typical hockey schedule. That's just...
Yeah. Yeah, and you're going to see guys go to the coach and say, look, my groin's a little sore, where he typically would play, and he's going to take a night off. So I'm agreeing with you, but I don't think a 100% healthy guy is ever going to ask for a night off. That's not how we roll in our business. I just don't believe it.
And you trust players to be honest about how they're feeling?
Yeah, I do.
What about minutes?
I think they generally will lie to play. But I think in this schedule, especially where we've got a taxi squad, they've got healthy bodies right there. It's not that difficult to recall someone. It's not expensive. So, I think you'll see the odd guy take a night off, but usually with some kind of cause.
Brian, what else catches your eyes? Opening night is here across the league. What are a couple storylines that you really have your eye on?
Well, I think the notion that it's exciting because the Canadian team's going to the conference finals. That's that much is guaranteed with this divisional format. That part's exciting. That hasn't happened in a while. And I think there's a lot of excitement and optimism in Canada, which is mostly warranted. I think most of the teams are getting better. But the notion, like even your reaction, Adnan, like, why? Why would you pick Montreal over Toronto? That's a typical reaction in Toronto. Like these people are, I saw someone the other day out on Bay Street checking the railroad bridge to see how high it was to make sure the floats could get under it when they have the parade. So, I mean, this is the reaction here, is that we have the best team in Canada. Well, I don't think you do.
Now, hold on. Can you have a parade in a COVID world? I mean, you know.
Appropriately distant.
A little bit of sarcasm, Adnan.
You can put 5 million people ideally spaced. We could run it all the way up to Vaughan.
Yeah. No, I watched yesterday's press conference at 1:30, and I have no idea what the rules are anymore. That's all.
Yeah.
Well, people in Toronto, I think right now, think the Leafs have made positive changes, and they have. And they have a really good team, and they're going to be fun to watch. I think they're really explosive. But I think the one thing in a hard cap system, this is kind of endemic through the whole league, but with the Canadian teams in particular, I'm struck by how top-heavy all of the contenders are, and therefore how thin all of the contenders are. I truly think if you're one of these elite teams in the Canadian division, you're one injury away from catastrophe.
With Brian Burke. So going back to the Leafs changes, and I don't think it's a 100 one way, zero the other way, but if you were to ratio this, Berkey, some of the changes that have been made around the edges, if you will, to the Maple Leafs, the veterans like Thornton, Simmons is not on a minimum deal, a mil and a half, but he's not getting paid a lot. How much of that was just based out of necessity due to the cap versus actually wanting to change the personality of the team, that you could, you needed a different type of player than what Kapanen and Johnsen were giving you versus the fact that they were both making $3+ million a year on the salary cap?
Well, I don't think there was any issue with either of those two players. I think the Leafs were happy with Johnsen and with Kapanen. I think they just felt they needed to move the cap space. With Simmons, they're bringing in a proven leader, a gritty guy, a vocal guy. Like that's a good move. Putting him in your dressing room is a good move. Adding him to your lineup on the ice is a good move. What I think has gotten lost in the translation is everyone says, oh, they added Wayne Simmons. Well, they didn't. They just replaced Kyle Clifford. So there's no net. You could argue which one's tougher, but there's no net gain in toughness other than a few percentage points. So they took one tough guy out of the lineup, put another one in there, albeit a character guy who I really like, and they brought in Joe Thornton, who is an upgrade on any team in terms of the dressing room. The guy, after 20-plus years in the league, still has a joy for the game, still is able to keep guys loose. I think a really good addition. I just question whether he's in the right spot, playing first-line left wing, whether he can keep up. And I do question whether it was the right use of their last little bit of cap space, because I think I would have used it for some more grit. You look at Ottawa's coming in here. Montreal's coming in here with Edmondson and Anderson. They got tougher. Ottawa got a lot tougher. You know, they added Watson. They added Brown. They added Goodbranson. I mean, I think the Leafs in game 2 and 3 are going to see what the new-look Ottawa Senators look like, and they're going to wish they had more toughness.
When you talk about, and this is totally qualitative versus quantitative, but when you talk about being a good guy in the room, what can Joe Thornton be for his higher profile, much younger teammates?
Well, I think just talking to Kyle yesterday, I think the positive aspect of his outlook on life, and I've talked about this a lot, I think sunny guys, upbeat guys, bring sunshine to a room that's often dark. Players are crabby, grouchy, the schedule's hard, the coffee's not good enough. They bitch about everything. And when you get a guy who doesn't bitch and really sees that today's going to be a great day, Teemu Selanne was like that for me. Brad May was like that for me. These guys walk into a room and they bring some sunshine in. And Joe is so respected, and he's a winner. I've heard people say, oh, let's go get a guy who's got a ring. Oh, Joe doesn't have a ring. Well, he's got Olympic gold. He's got lots of championships. He's a winner. And so to me, I get why they brought him in. You're at the grocery store. You got a buck and a half left. Are you going to buy a cake? like something frilly, or are you going to buy beans that you need to have for supper? I think they should have bought some beans.
Mm. Depends. If it's a chocolate cake, I might,
I might go for it.
Yeah.
I don't know about your taste, Brian. I'm more a dessert guy than a bean guy.
It was an analogy. I hate to waste it on YouTube, but I think the listeners get it.
Yeah, and just keep us apart 2 or 3 hours after after the beans. I wonder, too, is, and we're just guys with microphones in front of our faces that, and we yell into them, but is Thornton a value that way, that he can grab a Zoom call that would otherwise be assigned to an Austin Matthews or a Mitch Marner? And, Berkey, you know us, we're like moths to lights. Maybe Thornton drops something in our laps that distracts us and we chew on it for a day or two, and then we're not looking at the actual issues with the team if they're going through a tough time or whatever. Is there value in that?
Yeah, a little bit, but that's that. The media never gets off the scent of the trailer. If the team's struggling, a good lighthearted interview with Joe Thornton ain't going to save them. That's never it's the same thing I would try, do a rant about something and get them off the scent. It never worked.
Well, the Colton Orr thing worked for a day, didn't it?
Well, a couple days.
See?
But it's not, I mean, the fact of the matter is if the team's struggling, the media's going to focus on the struggles, and I don't think a lighthearted interview from T.J. Brody or Joe Thornton's going to change that.
So, Brian, when you look at this Leafs team, you say they're the number two team behind Montreal on paper. What other Canadian team should we look out for that we may not be paying attention to right now?
Well, I think Calgary really improved, and I think they picked up the best goaltender who was available, and that makes a huge difference because that was an Achilles heel for them in the playoffs. I think that their entire report card is going to be written in May. I don't think it matters what kind of regular season the Flames have. Now people are going to say, we're not grading this team until we see the playoff performance because they've had two subpar performances in a row. And some of their key guys have had two subpar performances in a row. So I think everyone's going to give them an incomplete till they see what the playoffs do. But I like the changes they made. I really like Chris Tanev coming in. I like the fact they're using Lindholm at center. So they've got two lines. They've got some balance and got some depth. Edmonton is right there with Calgary for me because of the two big guys. And I think they've got question marks too. But as long as they got those two big guys in the lineup, they're going to be a problem. Vancouver's top-heavy, young stars, really gifted, but not deep. Winnipeg's steady, but they had injuries in the playoffs last year. It was fatal to them. And Ottawa's the most improved team in Canada, but not there yet.
Is a team like Winnipeg, who could go either way, is that just contingent on Connor Hellebuyck backing up his incredible year last year with another one?
Well, I think he's that good. I don't know if he can play like he did last year. Last year was highlight reel after highlight reel, and I think they won 8 games where he had more than 35 saves. I recall that stat from the playoffs. I don't know if he can duplicate that, but even if he's 90% of what he was last year, they're going to be in most games because he's that good. But just, again, question marks. Laine wants out, supposedly. Roslovic wants out. There's some question marks there. They have not improved their team much the last two off seasons like other teams have. So I predict that they'll be a good, steady team. I really like Winnipeg. Who doesn't like that team, right? But I don't see them being a playoff factor.
So, Berkey, you no doubt have kept your calendar open for April the 12th because you're probably going to do 8 or 9 hours of TV that day. That's the trade deadline. What do you think the trade deadline will look like? What kind of content will you be covering that day? Will there be moves or will, especially with cross-border trades, the COVID rules cause issues there?
Well, I think a number of GMs I talked to told me that they expect different COVID rules by April. They expect a shorter quarantine for players coming over from the U.S., 7 days, 6 days, 5 days. And you remember, for a while there was that quick quarantine in Calgary. If you tested at the airport, it was, 48 hours?
Mm-hmm.
So they expect a shorter quarantine. If we can bring COVID under wraps, obviously it's exploding out of control right now in the U.S. But their anticipation is a different quarantine period. If there's not, they're going to have to make that trade 14 days before they want to use the player. Because if it doesn't change, that's the thing. And after the deadline, they've only got like 10 games. So it's like, you know, there's not much left after the trade deadline. I think there'll still be activity. I still think it's irresistible. If you think your team's in the hunt, you're going to go out of piece. And every year I talk about this, more mistakes are made at the trade deadline. 20 teams will add a piece to try to get better. And I checked yesterday again with the NHL. They're only going to award one Stanley Cup this year. I checked.
It's funny how that remains the one consistent, huh? Year after year?
Yep, I check with them every year just to make sure they're not changing the rules on me.
Yeah, I hear you. Brian, one last thing. I know this is a feel-good day, and, you know, I always say with baseball, time begins on opening day. But brutal news story this week with Evander Kane. The Shark Star reportedly has filed for bankruptcy. He's being sued by a bank. As a GM, as an executive, I know the NFL has a rookie symposium for all draftees and undrafted guys coming into the league. How much education is given to players coming in about all the pitfalls that could exist for a pro athlete, for a rich pro athlete, for a young rich pro athlete coming in? And what are some of the messages that organizations that you've worked for, that you've run, pass along to some of these kids who get a pile of money at a real young age?
Well, the NHL's program is every bit as progressive and just as advanced and just as good as the NFL's or Major League Baseball. They all work together, actually. The leagues work together. They've actually done videos together to show players scenarios, real-life scenarios, where they get approached at a bar, wrong people, wrong place, etc. So I think they do a good job of that. And I don't know Evander Kane other than to say hello to, but this sounds to me like he's got an addiction issue. And this is something that if we were aware of it on our team, I'm sure Doug Wilson was too, not initially, but once you become aware of the magnitude of the problem, you've got to get counseling for the player. Addiction to gambling is no different than addiction to alcohol or drugs. So it sounds to me like an addiction issue. Hopefully they can fix it. Bankruptcy is designed to discharge debts like this. Hopefully they can get him back on the rails.
Berkey, it'll be awesome tonight. Leafs and Habs, no better way to start it, and we're all rooting for a playoff matchup between these two teams. I think both cities would enjoy it immensely. Thanks for this, and we'll talk again very soon.
Okay, thanks, guys. And
Brian Burke of Hockey Night in Canada is To the Point with Brian Burke segment, the NHL on Sportsnet. And you can hear him all over Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He thinks the Habs are the best team.
That was interesting.
And we're getting texts. Berkey was friendly this morning. I'm assuming that's a Habs fan. Some love for Berkey coming from 613 area codes on the text line because of the love he gave the Sens, the most improved team in Canada. See, I don't mind that approach. And I mean, I take Berkey at his word. He feels how he feels about what he sees on paper. But there are different ways to let it be clear what your expectations are of this Maple Leafs team. There are a lot of people who need to see it. It's looked beautiful on paper for years now.
Mm-hmm.
Now we need to see it, and we need to see it when it counts.
On paper and on the spreadsheets.
Yeah. I mean, you can score 4 goals in game 42 in an 82-game season. And that and a nickel, Matt Foley, the great Chris Farley character, will get you what? In mid-May, if you're not playing.
What our pal John Gibbons, what would he say? What matters is when it's nut-cutting time.
Nut-cutting time. Kenny.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And we have not seen anything from the Leafs yet in nut-cutting time. This is the year they have to do it. Have to. Otherwise, the questions become bigger and bigger and broader and broader.
Yeah. And the pressure points are obvious.
Right.
I mean, you're paying. This is the one thing that didn't happen for this team. And I think the turnaround, the Shanna plan, as it was called, just kind of happened. And securing the first overall pick in Austin Matthews' draft year was the biggest piece of the puzzle. And then it was a joyride for a year or two.
And then getting John Tavares.
Yes, in free agency a couple of summers later. But what didn't happen for this group, Arash, was the Chicago Blackhawks situation where they won their first Stanley Cup with Taves and Kane still on their entry-level contracts.
Right.
Playing on the cheap.
Right.
The other thing that is true is that the 2012-13 lockout produced a collective bargaining agreement that ended those dozen to 15-year-long contracts that backslid, right? Where Duncan Keith is still playing on the contract that he played on in all the years the Hawks won the Cup the better part of a decade ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't mitigate AAV. And the Los Angeles Kings, well, they didn't really do that with their own players because Doughty was still a young guy and Kopitar was relatively young, but they had acquired Mike Richards and Jeff Carter, who were on contracts that they had signed with the Philadelphia Flyers that were front-loaded, long-term, to mitigate average annual value through the years. The Hawks had it. The Penguins availed themselves of Sidney Crosby's obsession with the numbers 8 and 7, right? August the 7th, 1987, his birth date, and number 87, give me an $8.7 million cap hit. Well, Sidney Crosby's a $13 million a year
no question
player, and that mitigates what Evgeny Malkin can make, et cetera, et cetera. So the teams that have had the so-called runs or the dynasties, if you will, of the last decade and a half have taken advantage of situations that the Leafs have not been able to avail themselves of. Plus, their stars, their young kids, came out of entry level and didn't have anything to show for it in terms of playoff success. And now you've got to go about it with an expensive core and trying to fill around the edges. I mean, I'm not trying to piss on the parade. The expectations are there. Like, get out of the North this year, boys. And I'm not talking about finishing first. I'm talking about getting to the Final Four. But they got to show they can do it. And that starts with playing consistently night in and night out in the regular season. And that's that.
Because Scotty Mac said so.
You stone cold.
That was good. That was good rant. I like that.
Adnan Virk on the other side. He's got a lot of gigs. One of them is with the NHL Network. So we'll continue to preview the Leafs and Habs tonight, which you can hear right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And probably at the end of the conversation, a little football talk. I mean, after all, NFC, AFC divisional weekend is just a couple of days away now, mm-hmm. or a few days away. And Adnan's Eagles said goodbye to the visor, Doug Peterson. The only head coach to lead the Philadelphia Eagles to a Super Bowl is out. We'll discuss that next. Continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, leading up to our broadcast of tonight's Leafs-Habs game right after Tim and Sid. Don Fear, NHLPA head on Good Show at 9:30. Colby Armstrong with the boys at 11 o'clock. I mean, Adnan Virk is on the line. And we obviously, Leafs-Habs, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But I did... Did Doug Peterson send you his visor as a souvenir? Are you okay? Like,
Philly.
You know, is everything going to be all right? I don't know. Is this a therapy session? Are we here to console you? You going to bring the content this morning? Where are you at?
There may be some venting. There may be some tears shed. First off, great to be reunited with Arash Madani. Guy. Hopefully we'll get some Laval Rougeor talk at some point.
Yes, nobody loves Guy.
Nobody loves university football like me and Arash. Listen, it's interesting when we look at what happened with the Eagles. I mean, there's literally a statue built of Doug Peterson. Like, Lincoln Financial Field is an hour 40 from my house here in North Jersey. And there's a statue to what Arash just referred to, Philly, the Philly special, him and Nick Foles. And Scotty, to think that after the Super Bowl triumph, which they had never done before, three playoff appearances, one disastrous season, 4-11-1, he's out. It's not only surprising to me, it's a little bit alarming to me to think of, like, this is the success rate that coaches are going to be raised by. But here's what I think happened. I think Jeffrey Lurie called him in at the end of the season and said, okay, Doug, this was a brutal year. You're a good guy. What happened? Let's figure this out. Doug's like, yeah, totally, 100%. This is, what do you want to do with the offense? we got to figure out the offense. Doug goes, no, I got it. He's like, what do you mean? Like, we got to bring in an offensive coordinator, right? Someone to call the plays, like Frank Reich did. He was great. Nope, I'll call the plays. Okay, what about Wentz? He had a disastrous season. How do we fix this? I got it. I'll fix him. Defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz is going to retire. What do you think there? You know what? We'll figure it out. And I think Jeffrey Lurie said, okay, either I'm going to have to bring in people who are going to offend, upset Doug and go, all right, I'm wrestling power and control away from you, or I just part ways right now and start fresh, which is what led to some very odd comments from Jeffrey Lurie when he was saying Doug did not deserve to be fired, but this is the decision. And you as a reporter naturally say, well, hang on a second. If he didn't deserve to be fired, then why did you fire him?
Because you're the owner. You're the owner. You made the decision.
Right. I don't understand. He didn't deserve this. Well, then why did you do it then? And I think what is awfully, if we can have a little bit of comic relief, Doug Peterson, who I think is a good man and a good coach, may have lost the room. And what is most fascinating is this, guys. His final act as Eagles coach was playing Nate Sudfeld in the fourth quarter. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. I'm like, wow, what a way to go out. And by the way, I do not subscribe to the lone gunman theory. Anybody who tries to think that's why he got fired is an idiot. That clearly was approved by Howie Roseman and Jeff Lurie. They clearly told him, hey, Doug, you know, if we lose this game, we go from a number six pick to number nine draft pick. If we win this game, that means absolutely nothing. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. So I don't think he was operating alone, but I do think it raised the ire of Jason Kelce and Miles Sanders and the rest of the players. That certainly didn't help, Doug.
So I have a theory on teams that have never won a championship before and what happens when you win a title. That everybody goes insane. And everybody thinks they have been responsible for this. And that, by extension, makes them the smartest guy in the room.
Is this your warning, by the way, for the Leafs front office after they win the Cup this summer? Is that
when?
Oh, yeah.
When? Win a round. I wonder, Adnan, does Jeffrey Lurie, the owner of the Philadelphia Eagles, now suddenly fancy himself a football man and think he's the smartest guy in the room and he knows what he's doing when it comes to football operations and he's got this?
Yeah, there could be an element to that. I think you're absolutely right. Arash, in the past, you know, and I'm not saying all owners need to be meddlers like Jerry Jones, although he has not had a great track record since 1995. And I'm not saying other owners should just do nothing and be passive. I think you have to kind of find that happy balance. But Jeffrey Lurie for years was not somebody who was a very well-known entity aside from the Philadelphia Eagles. To your point, it was, okay, yeah, he's the owner, but you see him in the press box and all right, cool. Now all of a sudden you hear his name being bandied about more and you go, oh, okay, I got it. So now that you got the belt, now all of a sudden you're having more input. What is also noteworthy is this. I think Jeffrey Lurie said, okay, I obviously have to make a change. This was an awful year. We're trending in the wrong direction. Do I get rid of the GM, Howie Roseman, or do I get rid of the coach and Doug Peterson? And maybe this was the easier decision in saying goodbye to Doug Peterson. But I think Howie Roseman's on the clock. It's like, hey, buddy, you know that you passed on Justin Jefferson and your receiving core is terrible. Like, you realize you've made some bad moves here along the way and you've missed. So you better not miss in this number six pick. Otherwise, you've got a year or two before you might get the heave-ho.
Justin Jefferson's pretty good.
Guys, who's he play for? Yeah. I haven't heard anything about him over the last 15 or 16 weeks. And look at what he's working with.
Yes, right? Exactly.
You're a guy.
Nate Sudfeld 2.0.
Yes. with Adnan Virk. So, I mean, you're an expat. You still follow Toronto teams closely, Adnan. What is your opinion of what this season means to the Toronto Maple Leafs? Is this a judgment on the Shanna plan and to whack that down to a more micro level, a judgment on what Kyle Dubas has done and is doing?
I think so in many ways, Scotty. This is in many ways a very critical year because, you know, I think people have looked at these guys and Dubas and Shanahan and said, okay, smart guys, hockey pedigree, analytics. Okay, they're building something, they're shaping something, but we've yet to see it come to fruition when it matters most. So now this feels like put up or shut up. And when you look at Matthews, Tavares, Marner, and Nylander, I mean, these guys account for nearly half of the Leafs' payroll this season, $40.5 million. But they also bring it. Those guys had more than half of their goals in 2019 and 2020. So oftentimes when you've seen these disappointments for Toronto, you say, oh, man, we got to get more out of these guys. But listen, I understand that sentiment. But generally speaking, they are giving you stuff. You need to get other contributions. That's why there's these depth options of Joe Thornton and Jason Spezza and Alex Kerfoot and Zach Hyman had 21 goals. So That's where, to me, that's interesting with regards to the forward core. Now, the defense, again, they do not have the name recognition that those offensive players do have. So you go, all right, can Rasmus Sandin step up as their top prospect, right? Jake Muzzin's going to be the shutdown guy. Travis Dermott, bright future. You know, those are the players, obviously, with Brody and Bogosian coming in as well, but you're going to have to look for one of those two guys to step up. Every successful team does not just have their stars perform well. They always have one or two so-called pleasant surprises. And that brings us to Freddie Anderson, who's got 1 year left on his deal. It's very affordable right now, but you're 31 years old and you got to win the big game. It's three straight years he was the losing goalie in the decisive game of a playoff series. Game 5 against the Jackets, Game 7 versus Boston the previous 2 years. So I look at a team that looks really strong, but they got to step up at this point, or I can just imagine the consternation on Yonge Street will only boil over.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for them, Adnan, to do something. Like win a round. Win one round. It feels that every year opening day, it's how far will the Leafs go? And I'm like, well, wait a minute. How about you get out of that first round series first?
And the
before
individual,
we talk about anything.
And the individual stats are wonderful, and they get you paid. But now it's time for team success.
Yeah, 100%. And I think in some ways, to Arash's point, I think a lot of Leafs fans thought there would be more movement. Like I remember... I could hear the cacophony of noise here in North Jersey in Secaucus at the NHL Network Studios.
Cacophony?
Cacophony, yeah. We'll try to spell that later on.
Yeah.
I can't top Berkey with truculent to pugnacious.
Or pugnacity, yeah.
Yeah, but everybody was saying, oh, they're going to do something. Like, someone's going to get traded. I'm like, really? Like, oh, Mitch Marner's going to be gone. I'm like, what? Like, wait, how do you guys know this? I'm like, no. Because, again, everybody feels like Toronto has the spotlight on them. If they underachieve, something needs to be done. So to Arash's point, at least from what I was hearing, and not even just, you know, fans, even insiders, like, okay, they might have to make a big move. Well, they didn't make that big move. They made supplementary moves. They brought in the Joe Thorntons, Wayne Simmonds, et cetera. So it's not only, hey, let's have team success, but if you don't have team success, well, then something major has to change.
Yeah.
Well, no question.
And I just wonder if that's the roster. Because I think it goes deeper and beyond that. But it's opening day. Let's not go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, but Arash, 10 games in 17 days.
You're going to get a real good idea.
Four and six or worse, and that rabbit hole becomes a foxhole, becomes something an elephant could fit in, right? I mean, a lot of digging will be done. You know, panic can happen quickly. It's going to be a weird season.
Yeah.
And the other thing, Adnan, is that you're only playing the opponents in your division. So every game is consequential. If you fall behind, it's going to be hard to make it up because divisional opponents, rivals, if you will be accruing points on a nightly basis, right? Because you're playing within your division. Somebody's coming away with two. And on more than too many occasions in this league, somebody comes away with one as well. 3-point games. So if you fall behind early, that's going to be problematic. And you're also playing teams on back-to-back nights or three times in four nights. If you run into an inferior team on a hot streak, that could change the complexion of something in a direction, A, you didn't anticipate, and B, you certainly didn't want. I think those little ramifications are going to play into this thing this year as well and could lead to some surprises.
Yeah, the great Michael Farber tweeted about a month ago once the schedule was released. He said, listen, if you're old enough to remember hockey back in the 70s, you know, there's something to be said for when teams play each other over and over and over. And that level of animosity and frustration, which will lead to a lot of chippy play. Like, hopefully it won't be too much stick work. Hopefully, if you like the fights, the guys will drop the gloves and get after it. But it'll be some really intense hockey. And it all depends on perspective, Scotty. One approach will be, man, really? Again, Leafs-Habs? Or it's going to be, all right, Leafs-Habs again. Let's go. Right? Their fifth matchup was great. I cannot wait for round six. So I think in a lot of ways, it's going to feel like a playoff series almost every night, especially when you're facing the same team over and over. What adjustments can you make? And again, this is where I think a lot of it is on coaching. Hey, what adjustments are you making? You've seen the way they've played you six times. How are you going to play them the seventh time? So I think that the smartest teams in some ways, obviously we always know the health is important, especially in a year like this with COVID, but I think the smartest teams who will be able to adjust, again, to bring it to football, it's like the team that can make the halftime adjustments, they might be the ones that are most successful.
Yeah, sports is so copycat, and I was just kind of looking last night at the Tampa Lightning and Dallas Stars. just to see who's kind of following their mold on how they built their team or how they're going about it. Nobody has. I mean, I think COVID's part of it. Let's remember the Lightning won the Cup without Stamkos last year. Like that's wild to me. If you remove Matthews from this team right now with injury, what do the Leafs become?
Tavares and people playing
right?
center.
I mean, you're removing 47 goals from Austin Matthews last year.
Well, if you're removing Austin Matthews, I'll tell you what we're doing, Adnan, and you know this because born and raised in this city, you know it as well as anybody else. If Austin Matthews or John Tavares gets hurt and you're left with one and not both, we will relitigate the Nazem Kadri trade.
Yeah.
That's what we'll do. Right? you know it, right? We'll do it.
Which, by the way, was such a good trade for Colorado. I mean, like, you look at them and you say, right, there's so much focus on McKinnon. The guy's unbelievable. And, like, last year I was hoping Colorado would make a deep run because I want to see as much of McKinnon as possible. And their whole issue was they don't have enough second scoring. Like, there's not enough supplemental players after him and Rantanen. And then Kadri comes in. You go, oh, wow, with him and Burakovsky, they found chemistry. It's not only that it was a deficit to Toronto because he's a guy that can score and has feistiness and all the rest of it, but really was a real boon, I think, to Colorado.
Guy, who's winning the cup this year, Guy?
You know, it's tough to pick against the Lightning because you mentioned all that talent and they did it without Stamkos, Arash, but I will go with Vegas. What the heck? I'm going to go with Vegas.
Okay.
I think it's an interesting situation in net right now. Like, I don't know how that's going to play out with Marc-Andre Fleury and Robin Leonard, and Fleury is the backup, but I do like their talent up front. I think they're pretty loaded and balanced, and I'm going to go with Vegas. I'm going to roll the dice, as they say.
You had a 25% chance to pick a Canadian team, Adnan. You know?
All right. Calgary Flames. I love Markstrom. They finally got their best goalie since Mika Kiprusoff.
I love the Calgary Flames. You are so full of crap.
I got a better selection for you. They play east of Kenora, south of Napanee, west of Cornwall, and north of Windsor.
An outstanding mention of Napanee.
Yes.
God, I lived many years near Napanee. Home of Avril Lavigne. She
yes.
put some of that.
Yes. Oh, Avril Lavigne. Come on, Guy. Leroy Blue. The greatest Bishop Skater football player of them all. Don't give me Avril Lavigne.
Oh, jeez. Bishop Skater football talk hashtag ratings. There we go. Bright and early on a Wednesday.
You're my man, Blue.
Yeah. Oh.
13 years ago today, Adnan Virk, the world was gifted this.
You can talk about the vacation, and if you do that, it's really unfair. It's really unfair. It's my team. It's my quarterback. And if you guys do that, man, it's unfair. We lost as a team.
That's my $17 million a year analyst.
Calling the game from home because he has COVID. Yelling over Jim Nance.
What's your favorite?
I miss T.O.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you've talked to him post-retirement, have you not?
Yes, and yeah, when he first signed in Buffalo, that was a trip.
Yeah, I mean, he was great for that sort of thing. Coach, player, do you have a rant that you love? Like, I'll find myself, Adnan, to give you mine. Every now and then, and Arash and I laugh about this, but every now and then I got to go back to YouTube and just dial up Mike Singletary 2008, right? Mm-hmm. Can't coach him.
Yeah, can't do it. Can't
win with winners. Can't do it.
Yeah. Like,
I'm from the old school.
Yeah. Here's what we do. We are not a charity. We do not give them the game. We hit people in the mouth. That is Bears linebacker 1980s, Mike Singletary.
Stop. Yeah. I better stop.
And you know what happens? Like, that soundbite is so prevalent. People go, that's what we need. That's the kind of coach you want. And you go, wait, I don't even know Singletary's a good coach. I know it's a great soundbite, but then like a couple of years later, he loses his job. You go, man, I don't know if he really had anything going on there, but and man, that was a good quote.
And I don't think he's been a coordinator even since. I think he's been a linebacker's coach, and now he's...
He was in one of those leagues, the AAF or something. He was a head coach.
You got one you like, though?
Jim Mora, I never get tired of. Playoffs. I mean, it's just incredible. I mean,
you kidding me? Playoffs?
Give me a diddly poo. Is there a diddly poo?
Diddly poo.
Yeah.
It never fails to elicit a gaffe out of me because just of how aghast he is by the question. Like, whenever you see somebody who is just so literally like, what? How dare you ask me that? This guy's been asked every question ever. And the look on his face when he playoffs, it's incredible.
It is a good one.
But you can't talk about anything without the Bears are who we thought they were.
The Bears are who we thought they were.
And that's why we took the damn field.
Let him off the hook.
You want to crown their ass?
You want to crown him?
Crown him. I don't even know what he meant by that.
Hello?
Hello? Oh, that's another.
Oh, there's another.
You play to win the game.
Yeah, that is.
Philadelphia Eagles great.
Right? That is good stuff. Good stuff. It's good to hear your voice, pal. Happy New Year. And we will be back at it next week. We'll be a week into the NHL season, and I believe between now and then the Leafs have about 8 games to play, so it should be good.
I was about to say, we've had this deficit of hockey, but now we're going to be overloaded, so it should be a ton of fun. Coming to you from the Miracle in the Meadowlands, this is Adnan Burke reporting.
The Miracle in the Meadowlands.
Give my best to Benoit Gruberk.
Glenn Constantine guy, all-time great. Now, listen, we talk about Nick Saban a lot. Glenn Constantine, all-time great coaches. Open up the phone lines.
Yeah. 416-870-0590. Don't call. Adnan Verk of NHL Network, MLB Network. Get you set for good show next.
Really? Really?
I made the nap and e-drop. It seemed to lead places. I'm a man. I'm 40 from a 416 number. Mike Gundy.
Not bad.
Who's now, 52 or 53 and sporting just a gruesome mullet.
Yeah. I'm a man. I'm 40.
Come after me. I'm telling you, though, that's all they talked about. There's no question. The folks in Stillwater stopped talking about whatever was going on with Oklahoma State. And they just talked about that rant for days. Distraction.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Berkey didn't so much admit it, but he came pretty close. The Colton Orr Rats deal. Things weren't going well. Right?
Made him sick. That he had to send down Colton Orr because the Rats were taking over
but
the game.
It distracted from the way things were going. At least for 48 hours.
Shout out to Berkey for calling me Adnan, by the way.
We had Adnan on at 8:30. Yeah. There you go. Your Habs tonight, Hugh. Leafs, Habs?
Hmm. I don't know. I think Leafs win this one. It would be their first win in 2 years over Montreal, by the way.
Okay, shut up.
I'm just saying.
Which makes bad radio when you don't talk, but you just crossed the line. I'll go out on a ledge. I'm not going to pick a winner. 3-point game. It will be a 3-point game. We are all over it all day here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, the Leafs and Habs. At 7 o'clock tonight, we've got the game for you. Good show. Has the NHLPA head, Donald Fearon, in a half an hour at 9:30. Keep listening to Sportsnet 590. The Fan, and we'll talk to you at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Kirk Cousins is here. If you